Hello, welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cavallo, and I'm here today with Mark and Sonia Rossidi, the heads of Healing Wounds, a nonprofit organization for PTSD, and also the authors of the book, I Just Want to See Trees, A Journey Through PTSD. Mark and Sonia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Mark.
You know, before we dive into this, Mark, you have such a great backstory with your service in the Army. Could you tell us just a brief history?
Sure. I went in the Army in 1989 as a clerk typist. I guess the Army felt that I would be a great typist of sorts, and I probably was the worst one ever. Right when Desert Storm started in 1991, I got deployed to Saudi Arabia and Bahrain, where I was deployed with a field hospital. This is where I saw doctors and nurses and folks, medical folks, taking care of soldiers. And I couldn't think of anything more honorable thing to do than to serve those who serve. And I fell in love with medicine then. And I was fortunate that the chief nurse wrote me two letters, one for PA school and one for nursing school. And I got selected for PA school. So in my 24-year career, I spent several years as an enlisted person, and then I crossed over to becoming a second lieutenant and ultimately retiring as a major. But I started off as a clerk and then later became a physician's assistant.
Now that's amazing. How do you go from being a typist to saying I want to help people on the front line? What was there a certain moment where you saw something that you wanted to get involved in?
Sure. Back in 1991, the war that yielded few casualties, but the ones that we did get were folks that I thought were, they came triaged through us. And watching the doctors, the nurses, the technicians at work and seeing how confident they were is something that really inspired me. Like I said, it was, and then from that point on, I decided, okay, well, listen, I got really nice letter of recommendation. Let me see what I can do with this. And so all my efforts, my schooling, everything I did to prep myself to go to PA school or nursing school was geared for just that end. So when the time came to put that I was able to put my packet in, because you have to wait a certain amount of years before you can do that, then it was I got selected, and it was seamless since then. The whole process itself is it was one of transformation, one of aha moments in life where you're saying this is what I need to do. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to take care of people. And that was it. I got the bug, and even to this day, I think back on how fortunate I am that I still maintain the same enthusiasm to take care of folks. I operate on the premise that in medicine, there are only two things allowed. One is humility, and the other is compassion. And I used to teach that to my students when they come rotate through my service. It's one of those things where we often kind of forget that human factor and then being a provider, and where we mostly operate on seeing the patient on time versus money versus that sort of thing, where I like to take my time with my patients. I like to have a rapport. I like to really get in there and take care of folks.
Now, getting back to Desert Storm, I know a lot of us leave the battlefield with some scars. Was there anything that happened to you over there that changed you as a person?
A plenty. Even though it was not nearly as intense as my time in Iraq and in other places, but there was. There's always that imminent danger of having a Scud missile land on your forehead. The countless hours that we spent in our chemical gear, fearing that there was a chemical attack. and things like that. You know, those are the kind of things that that kind of stays with you even to this day. I can tell you that I still can smell the mask. I can still smell my mask, the latex on there. I can still, you know, I can still feel sometimes how hard it was to breathe sometimes in a tent where you're sweating and it's hot outside and you're in a full chemical gear, and those kind of things. You don't forget, you know.
So as you transition back to civilian life, did you find that there were these elements that you couldn't leave behind and that maybe changed you a little bit as a person?
Oh, I tell this all the time. I tell people that, you know, when you deploy, you kind of leave a little bit of yourself. Something happens where you leave a little bit of yourself behind. And it's the best way I can describe it is, like, you know, when you have a casual that comes back from war and there's it's visible, you see that they're missing a leg or missing an arm. Well, with PTSD, you know, I call it kind of an amputation of the soul. You know, part of your essence of who you are is a little bit lost there. Things are not as funny as they were when you there's a certain innocence that's lost, a certain way about you that's no longer there. And you think about these things, you're just like, God, I'm really different now. And it's not immediate, I'm going to tell you that. It takes time before you recognize that.
Well, and you're a clinician, so you've got a very acute sense of these things that are going on within you. Are there any things that you might want to say to other people that could be struggling with PTSD that may not know the cues?
Of course, there's tons of warning signs. There's tons of things that you can look for. You know, the thing is that you're already hypervigilant. You know, it's part of the makeup. You know, you have to understand that PTSD is a disease of avoidance. It's a disease where people, you know, you always hear people saying, "Hey, you know, my grandfather went to war, but he doesn't like to talk about it much or at all." And that's basically what it is. You know, you've seen some horrors. You've seen some things that just don't add up, and to yourself, you don't want to relive it. So you stay away from those kind of topics. So it's avoidance. It's a but you, at the same time, it has a way of isolating yourself. You isolate yourself. You push your family away. You know, there's anger issues. There's bad behavior. Oftentimes ensues. There's depression. There's guilt. There's all these things that kind of trigger and they linger in the background. Now, one of the biggest misconceptions is people say, "Well, if you have all that, how can you even be functional?" Well, you are very highly functional. You can go to work. You can do your job. Do a great job, but still have that in the background. So the things I would tell folks that if they suspect that they might think they might have it, is to really go seek counseling, some care. It's such a hard thing to sell to somebody, because one, going to a counselor is you go see a counselor and you're having to open up, which is something that PTSD, you know, is completely against, right? You can't really do that. It's especially if the counselor is someone who has never served a day in their life. They have no concept of what the military is like, what you know, combat or what have you. So there's that. Then there's potentially there are some consequences of having PTSD. People lost their clearances or the ability to fly or what have you. So there's that in the background as well. So I tell folks, hey, bite the bullet, go see a counselor. You know, and work through this, because it is workable. It's 100% doable. And go ahead, honey.
And really with a counselor, you know, find somebody who you really connect with. Find somebody who, you know, really is the right person for you, and find somebody who really specializes in trauma. You know, not all counselors specialize in trauma. So if you find somebody who really knows how to help you through that journey, that's going to be so beneficial.
Now, Sonia, I wanted to bring you here on this. Is there anything that you noticed about Mark through your relationship where maybe you see him going into one of these, I don't know whether to call them episodes or what the right term is, but when you start to see him go into that mindset, are there any cues for you or you know, as the wife of somebody with PTSD, what are some tidbits right. you would give our audience for recognizing and coping with this?
Well, so me and Mark met, and he already had significant PTSD. So it was easy to recognize right away something was wrong. I mean, he wasn't sleeping. He'd get really paranoid about different things super fast. His anxiety would go from 0 to 300 in like a millisecond. He was having a lot of irritation, a lot of depression, some suicidal thoughts, actually quite a bit of suicidal thoughts. So, you know, the PTSD originally was pretty easy to recognize. And by training, I'm a psychologist, so it was even easier to recognize. But then, you know, tossing him into therapy pretty quickly, those symptoms actually elevate for the first couple of weeks to the first 2 months of therapy, because you're really ripping off the Band-Aid, right? So the nightmares increase, the feelings of isolation, the rage, the irritability, the anger, the frustration with things, the avoidance, the hypervigilance, paranoia, all of that increases at first because you're kind of poking the bear, right? But now that we've done, you know, really good treatment, there's definitely different times where as the wife, you know, things are coming up. So he had a really difficult deployment with the Wolfhounds. In 2006, 2007, and 18 guys were lost. And, you know, it was one of the most difficult deployments for everybody there. So majority of those losses occurred between Halloween and Christmas, and Christmas Day. So I know as soon as we hit mid-October, I know these next couple months are rough. Via Facebook, the posts come up with remembrance, and I know those days are just days in which we try to celebrate, but we also try to remember. So, you know, I know certain holidays, certain dates are tough. And, you know, you prep for it, but there's only so much prep you can do. And part of it's just, you know, supporting as much as you can and really, you know, loving him as much as I can and helping him through it to really be able to remember, but then also to be able to celebrate those holidays and those occasions for what they represent as well.
And that's great. It gave me goosebumps talking about that. I was getting a little emotional. As the wife, do you sometimes guys have trouble communicating what
oh, yeah.
we're going through? As the wife, do you ever take ownership? Like, do you ever say, like, is it something I did? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, guys typically, most guys in general, they tend to externalize depression. So instead of actually saying, you know, I'm sad or I'm disappointed in something, typically a lot of anger and irritability comes up. So, but the reality is that when you're met with somebody who's irritable or who's angry or who's lashing out, you want to react back, right? And or you want to run away. But the opposite really holds true, because this person's really depressed and they really need your love and support and respect, and figuring out the way through that storm is really a joint effort, right? So, you know, me and Mark, you know, the longer we're together, the better we get at it as far as figuring out how to communicate that and how to really journey together, how, you know, the things that I can do to help support and the ways in which he can really communicate what's going on internally. Because, yeah, it doesn't come naturally to say, like, you know, I'm really feeling a lot of shame inside, or I'm really feeling a lot of guilt, and I'm remembering these different things that I don't really want to talk about, but it's just painful inside. It doesn't feel good to talk about that, and oftentimes it comes up at random times, right? So then, do you want to talk to somebody else about remembering one of your buddies passing away, or worrying about what's happened to one of your you know, buddies, or, you know, really worrying about, you know, different events that happened in the past, when you're looking around and you're thinking your wife is feeling fine, this isn't affecting her, so why am I going to open up this box and share all of my demons with her? But the reality is that, you know, none of us are mind readers. So, you know, without opening up your box of demons, we can't know what's going on and what I can do to show you that love and compassion, right?
Yeah. Another thing you hit on, which I feel is so important, is the things you can't control. You know, those social media is a fact in everybody's life. And, you know, somebody posting a date online has no idea how it would affect somebody else just by seeing it. So, you know, when you guys get around these dates and you know that people are going to be posting about the holidays and stuff, and you know it's going to be hard, is there anything that you guys do as compensatory strategies to try to brace for the storm?
Well, I know for me, you know, there are several key dates that are very important to me. And before, what I used to do is I just get, you know, anxiety would go up and the sadness and what have you. Now what I do is I actually set a time that day to mourn, to celebrate, to commemorate, to remind myself of what happened that day. And I spend an hour doing that, maybe 2 hours, just kind of taking my time to reconcile that, and then knowing that after that it's done. So I don't perseverate, I don't dwell on it anymore, whereas before it would be kind of like a lingering thing. Now I just make a decision, conscious decision, that I'm going to celebrate this. And celebrate is not the right word. I guess commemorate would be the better word, where it's a time that I take to mourn, it's a time to remember, it's a time to heal, where, you know, I can find some reconciliation, and I can find comfort in knowing that this was a bad day in history for me, but I'm facing it. I'm setting aside an hour or two to really do this, and then after that, we're done. And every year I plan for that. It's kind of like it's kind of like a routine thing now, and it seems to work out so much better where you know, these events happened, and I just kind of work through them.
Well, and usually we have that in the morning versus then we'll plan something, you know, fun and enjoyable family for the afternoon. So, you know, like Memorial Day, we have in the morning, we do our Memorial Day ride. We celebrate with other veterans, and, you know, we go to the same place, lay wreaths. We really, you know, kind of walk through the graves. We really take the time for that. But then the afternoon, we dedicate towards, you know, swimming pool and barbecue and, you know, having fun. So, you know, I think we've really we've really kind of proactively decided, like, the morning time is our time where we, you know, get a babysitter for little guy, because we have 2-year-old. And where, you know, we can really take that time to really kind of, you know, honor those emotions. And then the afternoon is really our family time where we get to be grateful for being alive and being well and being here.
That is so awesome. Do you feel that by setting that time and, you know, Mark, I understand by the, you know, celebration's not the right word, but in many ways it is a celebration of the lives that you came in contact with and the memories that you have. So I really connected with that. Do you feel that by having that morning time, that if somebody that maybe doesn't understand what you're going through, because, you know, these are wounds that we can't see. It's not like a broken arm or a broken foot where we can sympathize with the cast. You know, and sometimes in social interactions, people say things that they mean to be good, but could trigger something by accident. Do you feel that by having this memorial service that you're prepared for those social interactions later on in those days and times?
You know, I think it's very therapeutic. I think doing something like that is a positive way of dealing with that event, right? So when you're done with it, you're saying, okay, now I'm good. I've already done what I had to do in order to you know, get through this today, and everything else is kind of, you know, it doesn't seem as nearly as important. And you have a lot of understanding for people who just don't understand or they don't know. You try to see it from their point of view as well. And I think that having that time to do this is perfect. You're able to kind of compartmentalize it. You're able to say, okay, I'm done with this, and now we're moving on.
You know, sometimes you prep the best you can, and sometimes you just have to know that unexpected things happen. You know, last year we were on Facebook, and we didn't even realize that one of Mark's friends died in a deployment 2 years back. But, you know, it had come around the anniversary, and they had shown different people who passed away in that unit. And so, you know, we're right in the middle of actually a barbecue with friends. And I turn around and I see Mark just going, you know, just completely white, and I just see his eyes change. And so, you know, I mean, sometimes you just have to pull aside and you have to make it through the storm. You know, there's definitely, though, those are definitely the big differences between being civilian and having the military as your family, right? So you have a much, much larger family, but there's also huge losses sometimes. And sometimes those things come when you least expect it. And so, you know, it's important just to know that no matter how much you prepare, sometimes the storm just happens. And so, you know, just figuring out, you know, and knowing that together we're going to make it through whatever it is.
That is such great advice. I want to shift here because, you know, you guys are bringing up such powerful stories and such great advice. And a lot of people living with PTSD don't know where to turn. And, you know, I was looking at healing wounds. Mark, could you tell us a little bit about why you started Healing Wounds and, you know, what the mission is?
You try to figure out ways to give back. You try to find ways to help people. I just don't think there's not nearly enough effort put into taking care of our veterans and people who suffer from this from PTSD. I think you know, hence 20 to 22 veterans commit suicide every day. So my goal was, you know, Sonya and I, we started this nonprofit together, where we decided that this is the way to go. This is what we need to do because not enough effort is put into it. So our goal is to educate people on what PTSD really is. There's a lot of misconception out there. There's a lot of folks that think that, you know, people who have PTSD are tremendously violent and they're going to do horrible things. You know, and the truth is that someone with PTSD is more likely to off themselves than to kill others. You know, so education is the big piece. I'm both for the people who do not understand PTSD and the people who suffer PTSD. And the other part of the goal is to, you know, show that there's hope. There's definitely hope in treatment. There's hope in getting over this and becoming, you know, the person you're meant to be. And lastly, I think is letting people know that there's healing through vulnerability. This is our main mission is to really just help folks out who suffer or think they might be suffering from PTSD and provide them with a resource. And that's what Healing Wounds is about.
That's great. And like you said, there needs to be more resources. You know, I found one of the very beneficial resources on the site was Sonya's blog. I like all the topics that she addresses, you know, whether it be fear or stress or living in the eye of the storm. Sonya, your writing, is it mostly how to cope as a wife of somebody with PTSD? You know, could you talk a little bit about your writing?
Well, my goal predominantly is really to reach anybody who's really right now suffering. So either the family members, the support system, and or the person themselves. I want to give a couple really easy solutions so that this way, you know, they can look into that and already start using some of those techniques. And then I also really want them to understand that there is hope and help out there and what it kind of looks like and what it feels like to be right in that beginning stage as far as kind of getting help. Because I think Mark's right, you know, going to a stranger and actually being vulnerable and sharing your deepest, darkest fears and your darkest moments with a therapist is so tough. But once you do, man, a lot of recovery can take place, and not just for PTSD, for depression, for anxiety, for panic attacks, for isolation, for, you know, any and all of these different symptoms. You know, definitely PTSD is one of our main goals, but really, you know, we really want to help those that are enshrouded in darkness really cross the abyss and really see hope and see that there's light out there.
And you guys are doing such great work. And do I understand that the book, I Just Want to See Trees, A Journey Through PTSD, is up for a book award?
So it was an international book award finalist in two categories. So it was a finalist both in psychology, and it was a finalist in military history, which is just amazing. So for a self-published author with, like, no experience writing, Mark did amazing. Of course, I'm biased, but You know, the book is just, it's a really easy read. It has a lot of humor to it, but it really shares some of the different traumatic memories that really led to a lot of feelings of poor self-worth, incredible survivor's guilt, which we see amongst a lot of trauma survivors. Really incredible feelings of guilt and shame, severe depression, severe isolation, some bad behavior, and you know, he really tied it up so well, and he really spoke about what it was like for him to really start treatment. And he started treatment twice. He first met with a psychiatrist who he completely didn't connect with. And then a year and a half later, he met with the social worker, and the social worker actually journeyed with him and really did.
Yeah, got me through this.
Yeah.
Mark, could you tell us a little bit about the title?
Yes. So a lot of people, I get that's a question I get a lot. And a lot of people think, well, is it because you're in Iraq and there are not many trees out there? Or, you know, those are the kind of things that they're going after. And so it has a much darker connotation. So so I just want to see trees. When a person who is a normal person, someone who does not have PTSD, sees a tree, they see the trunk, they see the foliage, they see the bark, they see the fauna and the flora and the beauty of it. Someone who has PTSD may look at that tree as a place where they're going to hang themselves. So I just want to see trees means just that. I don't want to see a place where I'm going to hang myself. I just want to see the tree.
Wow. So when you see trees today, what do you see?
I see trees.
So that's amazing. And this book, where is it available?
It's available on Amazon. We just finished the version of it on Audible, so that should be up shortly, available on like book on tape kind of thing, or on Audible. Also, my mother, who is a former professor of Spanish and French, is translating my book in Spanish and in French. So to give her credit for that, man, I tell you, she has no real understanding what a computer is, but she is just plugging away like none other, and I'm really, really proud of her for that.
So this is Mark Rossidi. Where could people go to learn more about you online?
So markrossidi.com, markrossiti.com, and or you can go to healingwounds.org. We also have a Facebook page with Healing Wounds. So you can click on that. And we've recently just started Twittering. So we're on Twitter as well. It's Sonia and Mark Rossidi.
And that Facebook page has all the great blogs. I like that page myself, and I find it a very inspirational read. Do you guys have any closing thoughts, anything you want to share with the audience?
We're so excited to be here. Thank you so much for this opportunity. You know, for those of you who are listening, who really connected to this and who are really saying, wow, this may be somebody in my family, or, you know, this is me, you know, definitely reach out to us. We can help you as far as looking at the resources. Otherwise, you know, really think about, you know, seeking help. For veterans, there's the Veteran Directory that has lots of different resources. The VA, depending on where you live, has lots of different resources. There's definitely lots of resources as far as therapy dogs.
Right. You know, I also think, you know, one of the best compliments I ever got was, you know, I get emails or I get text messages and such whether it's on social media, what have you. And one of the best ones I got was from a young man who wrote to me, says the book, it was given to him, my book was given to him, and because he read the book, and he says that the reason why he's on this side of the ground is chiefly because of my book and the message I had in it of hope. And since then, he's gotten help, and he's doing great. And when I first started writing the book, I remember telling Sonia, I said, look, if I could just help one person, I'll be happy. And it did. It helped me. And then to see that I'm helping others with this, it's very, very inspirational. It's very it's very rewarding.
Well, you've definitely inspired me, and I want to thank you both so much for coming on the podcast today. I really enjoyed having you and learning more about your story. Once again, you can go to healingwounds.org or Mark Raciti, RACITI.com. Those links are going to be available on the podcast notes. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and thank you, Mark and Sonia. This has been the Patient Activation Network podcast. Please like and share this for more inspirational stories like Mark and Sonia's.